The 2-2 pitch. Fly ball into center. Bader going back, 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 over his head. It's a clean hit. It's a ground rule double. And Cal Mitchell breaks up the no-hitter.
That was the story of Major League Baseball last night. A 33-year-old pitcher was one strike away from eternity. He was one strike away from history. He was one strike away from a no-hitter. And it was spoiled on a hit by Cal Mitchell that was just over the outstretched glove of the center fielder, Bader. And, man, that place would have been rocking had he been able to complete the no-hitter. Instead, he settles for 8 2/3. He was pulled after 129 pitches and falls just shy of a no-hitter. It would have been the third this season in Major League Baseball. And for the Cardinals, it would have been the 10th in their franchise history. The last Cardinals no-hitter is Bud Smith back in September of 2001. But Mikolas is 33. A career-high 129 pitches. They gave him a chance to finish it, and he nearly was able to get it done. But if he was 23, I'm guessing he would have no chance of throwing 129 pitches. But I hate to see a guy get that close. And he's not a guy that people know. He's a guy that's had the battle in his big league career. He's pitched really well this year, and he falls one strike short.
If it wasn't a St. Louis Cardinal, I'd...
You're a Cubs fan. Yeah, I'm a Royals fan.
Feel a little bit worse,
fans.
But yeah.
I feel, to me, it's not about the Cardinals. It's about that guy.
Yeah.
I mean,
I actually do kind of feel kind of bad for him, because to get that close and to not get it is, that's got to be heartbreaking. It's just, especially to work that hard, 129 pitches, and come up that short, or that close, and come up just a little bit short.
That's, it wasn't like tough. He was a couple outs away. He was one strike, right. One pitch, and honestly, the center fielder was very close to catching it. It'd be one thing to just line drive, clean single. This was very, very close. I know Bader probably feels horrible that he couldn't make the play in center field. It was just over his head. So near history for a 33-year-old pitcher last night in Major League Baseball, but he falls just one pitch shy of getting the no-hitter. So the Cardinals are close to having no-hitters. The Royals just simply lose. That's all that the Royals do.
And there's a base hit into center field. Slater's going to get another chance to throw. Here's Benintendi, and this throw comes in high, and it's 3-2 in the eighth inning.
That'd be as close as the Royals would get. They lose to the Giants. 4-2 was the final. Giants 3 runs in the sixth after pretty good pitching performance by both pitchers, including Chris Bubich of the Royals. But then he gave up 3 in the sixth. He's 0-4 now. The Royals are now 20-41. They lose their fourth in a row. And the two teams will finish their 3-game series this afternoon, 2:45. Jonathan Heasley was very good his last time out with a one-hitter. He's 1-3, ERA 3.62. He'll be on the hill for the boys in blue today. Cubs update with Jason Broadfoot.
Brought to you by the Chicago River. Usually they paint it or turn it green on St. Patrick's Day.
Yes, they do.
They might have to do an extra shade of blue this summer because the Cubs are that bad. It's 12-5 loss. Had a 5-0 lead, but the bullpen is the bullpen. And
who'd they lose to?
The Padres.
The Padres. Padres. Yeah. Padres, yeah. A former Royal, Eric Hosmer.
Yeah.
Who actually was off to a pretty good start this year. Huh. Well, what do you know? Cubs, Royals, joint misery. We can all drown our sorrows in a beer or whatever it is each and every day the way those two teams play.
Yeah.
College World Series is set. You have 4 SEC teams. You have Oklahoma and Texas from the Big 12. They'll eventually be in the SEC. So really, it's 6 teams from the SEC, right? And there's Notre Dame, who knocked off the number 1 overall seed, which was from the SEC, Tennessee. Stanford from the Pac-12 represented as well. Here are the matchups. Oklahoma against Texas A&M at 2 o'clock, actually 1 o'clock our time on ESPN on Friday. Oklahoma, Texas A&M, that used to be a Big 12 matchup. Notre Dame versus Texas, that will be at 6 o'clock. Texas is the Vegas favorite to win it. Of course, anytime there's some kind of sporting competition, Texas is the favorite. We all know that ain't going to work. Arkansas, Stanford, 1 o'clock on Saturday afternoon on ESPN. And then Ole Miss against Auburn, all SEC battle there at 6 o'clock on ESPN2. College World Series, really, really exciting stuff. Much like the Women's College World Series in softball, super exciting. So is the College World Series in baseball, and that gets started on Friday. All right, local sports with Dusty.
Yeah, we have a new basketball coach for the Lakeside girls team, but first I want to tell you about a couple area athletes that have signed letters of intent, and then we'll get to the new coach for the Lakeside girls basketball team because we have an interview with him as well. So Osborne graduate Mason Shirk and Concordia graduate Toby Wallmeyer both signed letters of intent to compete in college track and field. Both sprinters. Shirk is headed to Cloud County Community College, while Wallmeyer will run at Fort Hays State University. Shirk capped an outstanding track and field career this past season with the Bulldogs by bringing home 4 state medals at the Casey Championships in Wichita in late May. He was the 1A state champ in the 400-meter dash and helped Osborne to a state title in the 4x100-meter relay and also finished second place in both the 100- and 200-meter dashes. Wallmeyer brought home 2 state medals from the championships his senior season. He finished 3rd in 4A boys' 200-meter dash and took 5th in the 4A boys' 100-meter dash. He was also on the state qualifying 4x1 and 4x400-meter relay teams for Concordia as well. So those two athletes, again, Mason Schur of Osborne headed to Cloud County, and Concordia's Toby Wallmeyer going to Fort Hays State University. If you missed any of that, you can see more. Read it at ncksports.com. Once again, the Lakeside Lady Knight basketball team does have a new coach. On Monday night at the USD 272 board meeting, Scott Germark was named the head coach of the Lady Knights. Scott is from Beloit originally and has been actually teaching in the Lakeside School District since the 2018-19 school year. So the district and most of the people in the district are already familiar with Scott. He's been teaching K through 12 PE, physical education there, and has also been an assistant track and field coach at Lakeside since he's been there the last 4 years, assistant high school football coach last year, and also he is the junior high head football coach at Lakeside as well, and he'll be going into a second season coming up next year doing that. So now he has a new opportunity as the head coach of the Lakeside Lady Knight basketball team. And again, we had a chance to talk with Scott and about the position, and here's that interview. Welcome back on the Sports Ticket here on Katy Country 94. We're joined now by the new Lakeside girls basketball coach, Scott Germark. Scott, first of all, thanks for taking some time with us. People around Lakeside know who you are. You've been an assistant coach for football for a year and then high school track and field for 4 years and then head junior high football coach right now as well. So your name is familiar to most of the people there. But I guess when you look at your experiences with Lakeside so far, what led to you wanting to try to get this job as the girls basketball coach when it became available?
I just personally, I felt like it was the opportunity was right, and just to see what I could bring to the table to try to enhance the basketball program at Lakeside for the girls.
As your first head coaching job in the high school sporting world, what are some of the things you expect to see, and maybe what do you want to do moving forward with that opportunity?
I'd really like the girls. I mean, I really believe we got some, you know, good talent coming back. And I'd like for them to just work on like their court vision. And you know, I'm an aggressive person by nature, so, you know, aggressive as far as, like, rebounding and looking for our shots when we're open and just trying to work on our one-on-one moves and just be more fundamentally sound, because when, you know, the bullets are flying, you know, you go back to your habits, rituals, and routines, and so make sure that those are fundamentally sound and work on those every day.
You talked about you do have a good group coming back. There were a couple senior starters that are gone from the team that obviously provided a lot over the last 4 years for the squad, and Morgan Eberle and Bailey Cunningham. But you do have 3 other starters that return, which would be Taylor Betts and Kylie Bergman had a great season for you. And then Lauren Brummett really came on for them girls as they continue to move on this season. How much are you going to rely on those 3 to build your program as you move forward?
Oh, I think quite a bit. I mean, you can't replace, you know, what Bailey and Morgan have done over the last 4 years, you know, with Morgan, you know, being the main ball handler and just the way she was able to run things. And then Bailey, you know, her athleticism and that. We'll miss that for sure. So, I mean, we'll lean on those 3 quite a bit. But, you know, that's part of my job is try to develop, you know, to have a good deep bench. I mean, I'd like to run, you know, bring – at least run 8 deep if you can, but you know, it'll be a challenge, one that I'm excited for to see what we can do.
Scott Germark, the new head coach of the Lakeside girls basketball team, we thank you for taking a little bit of time here to talk about the new gig, and we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you, Dusty.
Yeah, Scott Dermark there, again, the new head coach of the Lakeside Lady Knights basketball team. So he'll have a chance to get them rolling and probably start working with them here during the summer a little bit and get rolling as the season will come along coming up next winter. So congratulations to Scott. We'll look forward to working with him. And, again, the Lady Knights will move forward with their new head coach.
See a note here that I got a text from a good friend of mine, Darren, and he texted me yesterday. I was up in Seneca playing golf with a friend of mine from Omaha, Nebraska, and we were done with our round and just chatting, and he sent me a text that my former tennis coach, all of those that played tennis at Trigger Community High School, of course, you'd be your brother's tennis coach. Remember, yep. Brad played there, of course, and Darren. And anyway, Lester Burghardt, he was a social studies teacher. I had him in study hall as well. Very laid back, nice guy. Always enjoyed Mr. Burghardt. And he passed away of pancreatic cancer at the age of 73 on the 12th of June. And so there'll be a funeral service on Friday. And what's so interesting, he was such a laid back guy. And he really didn't know a ton about tennis. He knew enough. But he was just, he kind of lets you do what you need to do. And if you needed something, you might ask him. He might have a piece of advice, but nothing extravagant. And he was kind of pushed around a little bit by some of his students because he was so nice. And there were some students that took advantage of that at times. But I didn't know some of the things until I read the obit this morning that he was in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. He actually was at the Pentagon for a period of time. Yep. He had a master's degree, I think, in psychology. And then some. Like, I learned a lot of different things about him that I didn't know. And he was my tennis coach for 4 years. We had a really good run at tennis. I was fortunate enough to make state all 4 years. And before that, he had Brian Goetz made state all 4 years. And then my senior year, we finished third at state. And so that was pretty awesome. And then a few years later when Darren was there, which he was there when I was there too, he was 2 years younger, a sophomore, just like Dusty's brother, Brad. Mr. Burghardt, according to Darren, he won coach of the year 1 year for tennis.
They got third their senior year too, Brad and Darren.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, so they got third, and Mr. Burghardt got coach of the year. Why he didn't get it the year that I was there, third. Yeah. I have no idea how they figured that out. But there was one moment I remember. It was Bryce Schneider and David Wildermann were always goofing off. And Dave was a pretty serious guy, and Bryce was just whatever. Bryce was fly by the seat of his pants. He was always a goofball. And so Dave was the serious guy on their team, and Bryce was kind of the one that was goofing around. And they'd play doubles together. And they would argue with each other sometimes. They would get in a little bit because there were times Dave was so competitive. It was like, Bryce, quit screwing around. We need to focus here. We need to win. There are times that they would be beating somebody, and Bryce would just goof off to where it got a little bit interesting. And then Bryce would be like, all right. I remember Bryce with the licorice in his mouth and joking. I mean, in practice, he just didn't take things as seriously, which maybe that's okay. And so anyway, Darren certainly remembers this. I know Brad certainly remembers this. Anyway, I don't remember all the details. Darren kind of remembers a few more, but there was, I think it was Darren hit the ball into the back of Dave Wildermann or something. Dave got all mad. And so forth and so on. And so he was mad, apparently, I think, at Darren, if I remember correctly. It's been a long time, so I don't remember all the details. I do remember the most important detail. Mr. Burghardt went on out to the tennis coach, and our tennis coach, Mr. Burghardt, rest in peace, just passed away. And this was back in 1994, the year I graduated. So this is a long time ago, 28 years ago. So he went out. He said, Dave, cool it. Stop it. You know, Dave's like, he didn't listen. And then Mr. Burghardt got a little firmer. He said, Dave, stop it. And Dave goes, what are you going to do about it, Burghardt? Well. Nobody thought Mr. Burghardt had it in him. Mr. Burghardt marched right on the tennis court, and he took Dave Wildermann down to the ground. And Dave didn't talk back to Mr. Burghardt ever again. And Dave was in for a rude awakening. He had no idea what was going to happen. And Mr. Burghardt went down and just took him down. I had so much respect for Mr. Burghardt after that happened, and I was like, wow. And, you know, you do that now as a coach, you're probably fired. And honestly, he didn't beat him up. No. He just took him down. He's like, he just went out there, and Dave was shooting his mouth off, and Mr. Burghardt just took him to the ground. He didn't beat him up, didn't kick him, didn't punch him, just took him down. Well, Dave, he didn't know what to do. He was just absolutely stunned. We're all looking. I think our jaws dropped to the tennis court. We were like, wow, did we just, is that Mr. Burgart that we know? We have never seen that. But he got fed up with Dave's attitude, and he decided to take care of it himself. And Darren was talking about this yesterday when I was talking with him on the phone as I was coming back, and so that was one of the funny memories. But Mr. Burgart was a great person, and he passed away at the age of 73. He was our tennis coach at Trigard Community High School. He's also in the classroom and did a lot of great things outside of the classroom, outside the tennis court, and a lot of things after he quit teaching. He was 29 years. He taught there at Waukenia, at Trigard Community High School. So our thoughts and prayers to Mr. Burgart and his family.
Absolutely. Yeah, I talked just a little bit about it yesterday, but I, you know, 4 years as a tennis coach, government teacher, and all that other stuff. And for me, it was also, you know, conversing with him with in church activities and things like that, because he always helped lead our prayer breakfast when the Catholic Church would host it there in Waukenia. So it was a relationship that was obviously one I enjoyed. His wife was my sixth grade teacher as well. So I'm fond of the Burgart family, obviously, and they've spent a lot of time educating people in Waukenia, and we learned a lot from them, and I'll remember probably more of who Mr. Burgart was outside of tennis and outside of the classroom than that. I mean, he was a great teacher, and again, he was coach for 4 years, and so yeah, it always hits home when something like that happens. So
73.
Yeah, I just found out like a week earlier that he had gotten cancer, and I'm like, well, that's not gonna, when you get that diagnosis, it's not good.
He caught it late from what I was told. So rest in peace, Mr. Burgart. So yesterday I was golfing Seneca. It was 95 degrees and windy. That's not a good combination, but it beats what we were going to try to play. My friend and I, he's from Omaha. I lived in Omaha, and him and I became good friends. He was one of the two best men in my wedding. And we, you know, once we have kids and we're busy, we rarely get to see each other very often. So we try at least once a year. We used to do all this golf trip where we would go and we'd play a week of golf. And this is when we were younger and our bodies could deal with it. We played 252 holes of golf in a 7-day stretch. We went out to Colorado. We played a lot of different courses. And I remember we played 36 holes, 3 straight days. That's 2 rounds a day. Okay. That's insane. We did that. And then that very last round, we were ready to cuss to the heavens and throw our clubs and break them in half, because we were on a course behind people that were slow. It was a hot day. It was our final round in Colorado. And we were not hitting the ball well, and we were both very frustrated. We said, you know what? This is stupid. We're going to take a day off. So we took a day off, and we just, like, went to the bar and went out to eat, you know, chilled out, whatever. And then we drove all the way back to Omaha. That's when I lived. I didn't live in Omaha at the time. But anyway, went up there, and we're like, you know what? We're going to play one more round. We're going to play at Woodland Hills, and we're going to play one more round, and then we'll be done with a golf trip. And so we did, and we played really great. It's like, what a concept. You take a day off, your body recuperates. What a novel concept. We played 252 holes, which is 14 rounds of golf in 7 days, or it was like 7 or 8 days, something like that. And so we were younger then. We could handle it. Well, now, you know, he has kids, I have kids, so forth, so on. We don't have the time to go away. Our wives won't let us go away that long, I'm sure. and so we try to get together and play a couple times a summer. Well, of course, COVID a couple years ago, we didn't play. Last year, we were going to play, but his body broke down. He had called what was frozen shoulder or whatever that is, and his back was bothering him, so we didn't play. And he texted me about a month or two ago, and he said, hey, you want to get together and play golf? I'm like, yeah, sure. Is your body all right? Can you play? I said, I haven't played much myself. He said, yeah. So we decided to meet in Seneca. That's where we met before. It's about halfway point between Omaha and Glen Elder or Beloit. It's a really nice 18-hole course up there in Seneca. But it's the first time that him and I played together in 3 years playing a round of golf. I haven't played a lot of golf. I played on Memorial Day weekend and played 10 holes one day, 13 holes the next. And I hadn't played a full round of golf in at least 3 years. And I was amazed at how I was, my driver was automatic. I was hitting it right down the middle of the fairway, man. It was like every single hole. Now I'd screw things up from there, but I would hit it right down the, I mean, my driver was Mr. Reliable. I couldn't wait to pull that driver out of the bag and hit it right down the middle, man. I was in a rhythm, loved it. So I'm sitting there like, all right, man, I'm going to get on, you know, here's this course, and I'm going to drill the ball here in Seneca. And I know the Seneca course is more difficult, not as wide open as Beloit, but I've played it before. But we have these strong winds, and they're going cross and whatever. So we get on the first tee. Yeah, the first tee. And I get up there, and I'm feeling pretty confident. You know, I've been driving the ball extremely well. And I hit the ball, and I hit it basically in the air about a yard or two high and hit the tall grass in front. So already I've lost the ball. I played 23 holes in Beloit and didn't lose a single golf ball. One swing in Seneca, already lost a golf ball. So I'm like, yeah, that's okay. Big deal. You know, mulligan. Second swing. Not great. Hit it nice and high. Wind takes it, carries it out of bounds. Like, it's time to go drink. It's already time to just get our money back. So then I said, well, you know what, Todd? You go ahead. I usually have two golf balls in my pocket. I got to go get a golf ball already. I said, why don't you go ahead and hit? So Todd gets up there. It's my buddy Todd. And he hits it exact same way I hit the first one. He hit the second one exact way as I hit the second one. So we both hit two. We still aren't even in play. First hole. Now, I'm like, he's got a good excuse. He hasn't played in, like, 2 years, and I've not played a lot, but I did play a few 3 weeks ago. And so then we eventually, the third shot is in the fairway. We hit, we play, whatever. And I could not hit my driver. Like, I've been crushing it, Beloit, and it was consistent. And it took me till like the 16th hole to finally figure out some kind of adjustment and then hit the ball better. And the reason I bring up this story is it's about sports. This is why sports is so awesome and why sports is so irritating and agitating. And I'll use a few examples. And no, I'm not telling you that I am on the Steph Curry level of sports. But it's amazing. Like, you can hit a golf ball. Like, you could be putting. You can be a golfer, and you can make every putt one day, and the next day you can't make a putt. You can one day hit your driver right down the middle, and you can't hit your wedge. The next time you go out, you hit great wedges, but you're struggling to keep your driver in play. That's golf. Okay, that's golf. You know, baseball, you're a pitcher, and you're on, man. You have a one-hitter, shutout, you look great. And then you pitch 4 or 5 days later, and you can't get out of the third inning. You have no location, you can't find your groove, whatever. As a hitter, you're hitting the ball, and it's just like it's a beach ball. You're in a zone, and you're just ripping the cover off the ball. All of a sudden, hit a couple lineouts. Next thing you know, you're in a little bit of a slump. Now the ball never finds the field. It gets caught every time. You don't get the good bounces, and you get in a slump, and then it gets to be mental. And it can be so fleeting. That success is so awesome, and the next thing you know, it's taken away. That's how sports is. It can happen in football. We've seen it. Patrick Mahomes, there was a stretch for the Chiefs last year where every pass that was deflected was intercepted. And Tyreek Hill dropped three, and he talks about not being targeted when he was at the Chiefs, which is just stupid. And Mahomes gets, well, those balls didn't get intercepted when they won the Super Bowl. And, well, Mahomes is struggling. Well, he can't catch the ball, too, and so forth and so on. So you have your great game, you have your not-so-great game, so forth and so on. My oldest son had an amazing 4 days of shooting the basketball in a tournament in Wichita. And, I mean, he will probably never have that type of stretch ever again in his life. And then again, he might. I don't know. I'm not saying can't. But that was insane. Well, we're going to play basketball tomorrow night. I'm waiting for him to go 0-for-10. I'm prepared for it. I'm not telling you he will. He's a really good shooter, but he may very well go 0-for-10 tomorrow night. Well, is that just us amateurs and younger people? No. Steph Curry went 132 consecutive playoff games making a three-pointer. Game 5 of the NBA Finals, the greatest shooter that's ever lived, according to many, went 0-for-9 from 3. And he had some open looks. He couldn't make one. Klay Thompson, we've seen him make 14 threes in a game against Chicago, I think it was. And he had a game where he had, like, 50, 60 points, and he took, like, 8 dribbles. I mean, the guy was just insane. But then we've seen him in the NBA Finals. He'd be open. He can't make one. It's like, why can't he make it? He's an unbelievable shooter. Why can he not make these shots? He's open. How did Curry go from hitting shots where guys are hitting his arm and he makes them to the next game, he goes 0-for-9. You know, how does a guy like Miles Mikolas, who's 33, where does this come from? He's never been close to throwing a no-hitter. Mm-hmm. Last night, he nearly threw a no-hitter. Next time out, this guy's going to get bombed more than likely. It happens all the time in sports. And that's what's so agitating about sports, whether it's golf, like tennis. You serve great one tournament. I mean, you're moving the ball around. It is perfect. Next time, you double fault. Oh, what is going on? And it gets in your head. Now you just want to lob it in, and then, of course, they'll drill it back at you. You know, pickleball, that's another sport. One day you're feeling great and you're moving around, and the next day you play pickleball, your body feels like you're 80. I've done that before. Like, my knees, my God, what? I felt great a week ago. Now I don't feel so good. And it's just amazing how we, as fans, look at these professional athletes, and we expect them to be perfect. And when they have off night, we're like, what is wrong with Steph Curry? What's wrong with Jason Tatum? What's wrong with Klay Thompson? What in the world happened to Draymond Green? We act like they're robots. First of all, we don't know how they're feeling when they wake up the very next morning. Their body could be in shambles, and they got to basically completely recuperate, and they've got the best people in the world to do that and work with. But we just take it for granted. And so when you do have it going, whether it be hitting a driver down the middle, you better enjoy it. If you've been making those putts, you better enjoy it. Because next time, when you're throwing strikes all the time as a pitcher, you better enjoy it. When you're, you know, on a stretch where you're 10 of 15 at the plate, you better enjoy it. When you're making three-pointers left and right, as I told my son, I hope you enjoyed that, because you should. But, dude, you could there can be games where the basketball goal is as big as the ocean. It's like whatever, you're so confident that anything you shoot's going in. I've felt that before. And then I've also been like, when in the world am I going to get one to go in? Because those are still good shots, but they're rimming in and out. Or they're just a hair long or just a hair short. And the difference between success and failure is very, very thin. But that's why we watch sports. Like, we sit here and we go, well, we got it all figured out, right? We know this team's going to win it all. Kentucky's 40-0, man. They ain't losing. There's no way. Kansas, there's no way they're going to win the national championship this year. They're not that good. I mean, there's just no way that's going to happen. UNLV, are you kidding me? Duke lost by 30. Duke ain't beating UNLV, who's undefeated. Oh, yeah, well, there's a thing called pressure. There's a thing called confidence. There's a thing called momentum. And sometimes you get the big upset, and then what happens? You got to play one more game. And that was your Super Bowl, and you didn't even win it all, and so forth and so on. So, yeah, how do you go up 3-1 in a series against the Cleveland Cavaliers, one win away, when you won 73 games that season? It's just what makes sports so great, but yet so frustrating at the same time. You know, why, you know, the Cubs win a World Series, the Royals win a World Series, and a few years later, we're talking about how bad they are again. And that's what I tried to say in 2015. There are people that were complaining, Royals fans, about certain things when the Royals were winning 95 games. And I remember we talked about on the show, Dusty. You know what? It's our job on the show to talk about this, analyze this. But Royals fans, you really need to enjoy this. Because, first of all, not a lot of teams go back-to-back World Series. So really, really enjoy this ride. Okay? The Chiefs is another great example. When the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. It's like, okay, now everybody's like, oh, the Chiefs can win three or four Super Bowls, so forth, and they still might. And we're like, well, you're all caught up in winning three or four. Why don't you enjoy the first one that you've had in 30-some years? Like, just chill out and enjoy, 50 years, actually.
Yeah.
Enjoy this moment. And we're so caught up in what's next that we don't actually enjoy that moment and grasp how great it was, whether it's making a whole bunch of threes, whether it's hitting a driver down the middle of the fairway all the time, whether it's making putts left and right, whether it's, you know, throwing a no-hitter, hitting a home run or a grand slam, whatever it might be. It's just so fleeting, success can be.
Yeah, I think we enjoy the moment, like, to
not
an
long
extent
enough,
while
we?
We're in it, right?
Yeah, right.
But you don't actually enjoy the moment the way you should until you're removed from it.
Yes.
A lot of times.
We
right?
turn the page too quickly.
It's like, okay, so you're in the middle of it now, but you want to be consistent with it now,
right?
Like with the Chiefs and Royals and things like that, when you're talking about teams that continue to, you know, year after year go out there and play. Now, there's some moments that I feel like I've enjoyed that I've been in because I knew this, it took forever to get here. And so you enjoyed that moment with the Royals probably more in 2014 than you did in 2015, because
yes,
there was more stress on you in 15 because they were really good,
right?
This is a team that was the best in the American League that is supposed to do this. That 14 team wasn't supposed to.
No.
So I enjoyed that for sure.
House money.
And, you know, the euphoria of winning that wild card game, you were there. I wasn't. But just to be able to enjoy that part of it. And then just kind of after that, everything else was kind of house money. It was it was gravy after that.
It was.
And getting all the way to the World Series Game 7 and then coming up short was obviously a heartbreak, but it was like, well, I didn't expect this at all. So you could deal with it a little bit more. Now, 15, if they'd have lost that and to the Astros there, especially, then it would have felt like a failure and you didn't enjoy the moment at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they were able to come back and make it to the World Series. And the Chiefs were the same way, right? That first year, you're enjoying it because it's been 50 years since they've been to a Super Bowl. They were making crazy comebacks, and I think it made it easier to enjoy that process. Mm-hmm. But then the next year, you're like, now it hits, and it's like, okay, you've got to be consistent. Now you're expected to do it.
Right.
And the Super Bowl was not fun. the next year.
No.
And you know, everything else has been more on eggshells than enjoying how good they still are, right? Mm-hmm. We just complain about all the little things that happen, but this is still an elite team, and we're not enjoying that at all because you're expecting Super Bowls. You're expecting to win, and you're expecting to get there when you've been there 2 years in a row, and then you lose like you did this year to the Bengals. I mean, it's just so many things that you can look at that you do take it for granted, and you don't sit there and be like, oh, that was a pretty good run there, even though they didn't finish as the champions.
Well, just a case in point, you take for granted that you have Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, and then Tyreek Hill is traded. And then the Chiefs kingdom, instead of focusing on the team that you have and the additions the Chiefs made, I think they did improve their defense. The pass rush is questionable, but they did improve the defense elsewhere. They got some youth to this team. Their draft picks are intriguing. And then, of course, we know that they had to revamp their wide receiver core because of the defections and Tyreek Hill being traded. I like what they've done. I think they'll be fine. And, by the way, Jerick McKinnon's back on a one-year deal. I'm sure you guys mentioned that yesterday. I don't know where he fits in exactly, but that's cool. I'll take him. Maybe save him for the playoffs and then actually give him the ball. That'd be great. But their Chiefs fans are all caught up in what Tyreek Hill's saying on a podcast. And I put it all on Twitter yesterday. I was just so fed up. I'm like, Chiefs fans, quit worrying about this. This guy isn't on your team anymore. All right? He didn't get traded yesterday. The Chiefs have moved on. He moved on. That's part of sports. All right? Eric Hosmer, well, we knew was never going to be a Royal all his life. We knew Moustakas wasn't going to be. We knew Lorenzo Cain wasn't going to be. We think Salvador Perez will, but you don't know. And so I'm sitting here, and Chiefs fans are getting riled about Tyreek Hill and what he says. I'm like, you guys are simply our pawns in a game. Think for yourselves for a moment and quit getting all riled up and stressed out and getting your heart beat up because of something Tyreek Hill says that you take as a major slam to your quarterback's face, and you've probably never met Patrick Mahomes in person anyway. So you don't know how great Mahomes is. Like, we know how great he is as a football player. But I'm sitting here, I'm like, why are we worrying about this and all this stuff on social media, getting riled up about what Tyreek Hill is saying? Think about it and just stop for a moment. He has a podcast he's trying to promote and plug and sell. It's no different than the talking heads on ESPN getting you to watch or watch their clips that they put all over the apps and everything else, because their job is to say something outrageous. Their job is to say something or scream at the top of their lungs to get your attention. Tyreek Hill's doing the same thing. It's just in a different way. It's a podcast. He's not screaming, but he's saying things that he knows aren't even true. I mean, and then he gets the talking heads. They fall for it. So then they talk about it, and then everybody runs with it. And Chiefs Kingdom gets all riled up about how mad they are at Tyreek Hill. It's like, wait a minute. Tyreek Hill got his money. The Chiefs didn't want to give him that much money, which was the right decision, as I've said all along. We'll find out. Even if the Chiefs don't do great this year, I still think it was the right decision long term for the window to be widened myself. I don't think Tyreek Hill is going to be awesome in Miami, but he could be. And if so, big, great. The Chiefs aren't playing the Dolphins this year. They're not on the schedule. Now, if they meet in the playoffs now, you should be worried about Tyreek Hill. But they're not in your division. You don't play him at all head-to-head. He's with a different quarterback that is not even close to as good as Patrick Mahomes. And people getting all riled up because he says Tua is more accurate than Patrick Mahomes. That's him just backing up his current quarterback, which is what you should do as a wide receiver. People have been critical of Tua, made fun of Tua. Chiefs fans actually kind of started it, to be quite honest with you. Oh, yeah, good luck, Tyreek, going with Tua, who's not even close to Patrick Mahomes. And Tyreek's like, hey, listen, I signed with the Dolphins. I'm a member of the Dolphins. Now my quarterback is not 15 anymore, so I don't have to support 15 all the time. I'm supporting my new guy, which is Tua. And, well, Tua is really accurate. Mahomes got the stronger arm, but Tua is more accurate than Patrick. Well, first of all, of course he can be accurate when he's throwing 5-yard outs and 10-yard curls compared to Mahomes deep down the field. And with tremendous speed, you got to push the ball down the field. Maybe Tua can do it. Maybe he can't. And, yes, it's silly for Tyreek Hill to say he's more accurate when he hasn't even played in a game with Tua when the bullets are firing. However, why are we getting all riled up about it? Like, Tyreek can say whatever he wants. And if you disagree, you disagree. But it has no impact on how Patrick Mahomes plays. It has no impact on what the Chiefs do. Once Tyreek Hill is off this team, which he is no longer part of this organization. And you can get all sore about it and go, well, we did this for Tyreek, and we took a chance on Tyreek, and then we stuck with him through the tough times when some people said to get rid of him. Yeah, that's true, but it's a business. He helped the Chiefs win a Super Bowl ring. He put together 6 unbelievable years with the Chiefs. I think it was 6. And he was a steal for a 5th-round pick, and the Chiefs got a lot back in return for him. So why can't we just move on? Like, let Tyreek talk all he wants. At the end of the day, I'm going to say that the Chiefs are going to have more Super Bowl rings from here on out than Tyreek Hill will. I'm willing to go bet money on that. Now, they might, neither one might ever win a ring again. That's possible too. But I just, it's the people that fall hook, line, and sinker for this stuff. And they need to stop being lemmings. People need to quit being lemmings. You need to start thinking for yourself. Quit always watching the same channel all the time. Quit listening to the same person all the time. Quit listening to the same politician all the time. Quit listening to the same podcast all the time. Actually create some diversity and broaden your horizons, but also say to yourself, why is Tyreek saying these things? I mean, really think about it. Do you really think Tyreek Hill thinks Tua is a better quarterback? No. but what do you expect, Tyreek? When Tyreek Hill is asked on a podcast, who do you think's a better quarterback? He basically went down the middle. He said, Mahomes has a stronger arm, Tua is more accurate. What do you expect Tua to do, Chiefs Kingdom? He's no longer a member of your organization. What do you think he's going to say? Well, you know, Mahomes is great, greatest quarterback ever lived. And Tua, honestly, I think he might be the worst quarterback in this league. I don't know if he'll... I'm going to get open. I don't know if he's going to be able to get me the ball. What do you expect him to say when he gets questions like that? Which, of course, are set up, of course. He knows what he's going to say ahead of time. It's all a show. It's all entertainment. And it is amazing to me how many people fall hook, line, and sinker for the ruse that is they know how to manipulate you. I'm talking the public and society. Our politicians know how to manipulate our society. There's no doubt that entertainers and celebs and athletes know, if they're very smart, they know what you're going to chase after. Because our society, for the most part, is extremely predictable. For the most part. I'm not saying always, but it's very predictable. Tyreek Hill says something that is a simple slight towards Patrick Mahomes, Chiefs Kingdom. Oh, you can't say that about my quarterback! Well, but he isn't Tyreek's quarterback anymore. He's your quarterback, but he ain't Tyreek's anymore. He don't owe jack to the Chiefs now. He don't owe jack to Patrick Mahomes. Nothing. He's moved on. Now, when his career's over, I'm sure he'd be like, man, Patrick Mahomes was the greatest quarterback I played with. And, man, we had such great years and won a Super Bowl ring. And he may still put up great numbers wherever he goes, Tyreek Hill. But right now, what do you expect him to say? He's selling his podcast. And the fact that people keep talking about Chiefs Kingdom, the fact that I'm talking about it right now, is actually feeding exactly what he and his agent and everybody else wants. And then people talk about how he's sliding and slamming the organization. I don't think it's that bad. He wanted the ball even more, and there are games where he didn't get the ball as much as he wanted to. Well, it's called adjustments. They're going to take you away. We can't just throw it to you every single time, Tyreek, because we got other weapons like Kelce and Mecole Hardman. But the agent helps with that as well. They all work as a team to say, what will get people riled up? If Tyreek Hill just simply talks, yeah, Patrick's a great quarterback, man. He's a good dude. You know, Tua and I think are going to have a good relationship, and I think we're going to have success in Miami. Does that make headlines if he says that? Of course not. So why would anybody watch his podcast? They won't.
Yeah.
They won't listen to it. They won't watch it. But if he says, Tua's got a better arm than Mahomes, or Tua's more accurate than Mahomes, or I think Tua's going to be just as good as Mahomes, or the Chiefs didn't use me in the right way, or I told the team that I needed the ball more and they didn't get me the ball, or they didn't put me in the best situation, or they didn't best utilize me, that gets headlines. And it immediately gets the talking heads on all the big networks to talk about that for 2 minutes on their talking head topics rundown. And Chiefs Kingdom falls for it, just like many other kingdoms fall for it. Just move on. Tyreek Hill is not part of this team anymore. The Chiefs will be just fine, mark my words, without Tyreek Hill. This team, before Tyreek Hill, made the playoffs before, all right? They've won divisions before, okay? The Chiefs have been successful before Tyreek Hill was a part of the Chiefs. The Chiefs didn't get to a Super Bowl until they got 15. Tyreek Hill was on this team before Mahomes was. And did they go to the Super Bowl with Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, and Alex Smith? No. So I'll stick with I got 15, and I got Andy Reid, and I'll work from there. And I've seen Andy Reid make it to a Super Bowl with Todd Pinkston as his best wide receiver. Okay? So I think the Chiefs will be fine, and Chiefs Kingdom needs to just chill the bleep out.
I'm just waiting for Tyreek to come out and say Skyler's better than Tua and just move on.
Oh, that'd be awesome. That'd be great. Yeah. Listen, if Tyreek Hill isn't getting the ball, I mean, he got the ball a ton last year. I don't think he's going to get the ball that much in Miami, but if he doesn't, is he going to become a diva? One of those wide receivers that's going to turn into the next Terrell Owens and complain all the time about not getting the ball and be a cancer? I don't know.
Could easily happen.
I think it could easily happen. You know, there's not as much structure in that organization as you did with the Chiefs. You know, the head coach. Who's the head coach of the Dolphins now? Because Flores got fired. Oh, it's the guy from San Francisco. He's a rookie head coach.
Name dropped out of my... He's
McDaniel.
Funny,
is it McDaniel?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's mixed race. He joked about that.
Mike McDaniel. McDaniel, I think. Yeah, because I think it's Josh McDaniels, and I think it's Mike McDaniel.
Dolphins head coach. I think it's McDaniels. Yeah, Mike McDaniel. He's a rookie head coach.
Yeah.
I mean, so how is Mike McDaniel going to handle Tyreek Hill when he doesn't get the ball enough? And then Tyreek Hill, along with his many times a loudmouth agent, Drew Rosenhaus, how are the Dolphins going to deal with that? They don't have the structure. I mean, for crying out loud, the Dolphins were going behind the back trying to get Tom Brady to own the team. I mean, the Dolphins have all kinds of issues with their owner, as we know. The Chiefs don't have problems with their owner. The Chiefs don't have problems with their GM. The Chiefs don't have problems with their head coach. The Dolphins are being sued by Brian Flores, okay? The Dolphins have all kinds of – they've been allegedly tanked on purpose. Flores says paid to lose games. These people are still in charge in Miami, believe it or not. Okay, Flores was blown out. So Tyreek Hill goes from a very stable, perfect, almost perfect organization, and from that standpoint, to a place of instability. And he's got a quarterback that still hasn't proven himself in this league. He's got a new head coach, new offensive coordinator, a rookie head coach. It's one thing if it's a new head coach that's like Ron Rivera, you know, experience. No. We're talking about a rookie head coach. How is he going to deal with Tyreek Hill if he becomes a diva and gets all mad about, well, I didn't get the ball enough, and starts pouting like Odell Beckham Jr.? You know, Odell Beckham Jr. didn't come in this league and do that right off the bat.
No.
You know, so I think there could be a lot of things that could blow up in the Dolphins' face with all this, and I think it could end up not working well for Tyreek Hill. But you know what? At the end of the day, Tyreek Hill can count his Benjamins.
Yeah.
And he's already got his ring. He can at least say, I already got my ring. You know, I think if Tyreek Hill hadn't got a ring yet, he might have stayed with the Chiefs, possibly. But the fact that you have the ring, now you can go get your money. It's kind of the same thing with Royals guys. Yeah, we could have maybe stayed here and made quite a bit of money. I've been happy. I can go somewhere else, get a little bit more money, and what are the odds we're going to win the second ring in Kansas City? We got the ring. Now I can just go chase my money. Like, I think there are a lot of athletes that feel like once I got my ring, now I can go chase my money. And I know I'm going to a team that's not nearly as good, and I probably won't even have as good of a year, but I'm getting my money. And you can't blame them. I mean, remember receivers that the Broncos had and the Patriots have had that have gone to other teams that have absolutely flamed out. Eric Decker's one I think of right off the bat for the Denver to the Jets. Guess what? He got his money. He never was a relevant receiver much the rest of his career, but he got his money. So be it.
Yeah.
You know? He got a ring.
Yeah.
I think he did. I think he was with Denver when – I don't know if he was with Denver when Manning and then won the Super Bowl or not. But some of the Patriot guys that got their rings, they go, the greener pastures, the Patriots say, we ain't going to pay you that much money. And they're like, I know that. I got my ring. I'm going to cash in. I'm going to go to the Lions. And I know they're going to suck. But I've got my $25 million in guaranteed money. And I don't blame Tyreek Hill one bit. But let's please move on and get over the fact that he's saying stuff to get you to watch his podcast.
Yeah, I've not watched a single episode and don't really want to.
I've just seen the clips on Twitter.
Exactly.
I'm locked out of Facebook because apparently I have to change my settings, but I'm locked out of Facebook. So Facebook Protect. There's something I've got to do, and I'll eventually figure it out. But, it's just amazing how people buy into this stuff. So easily, too. So easily. It isn't even hard to get people to just buy into that
like
stuff.
The accuracy thing is one that kind of makes me laugh.
Apply anymore,
even let's just even say it was true. That in no way makes Tua a better quarterback. There's so many more things that go into playing quarterback. I don't think anyone else is saying Tua is a better quarterback. I think, you know, even if it was just this one thing that's right, you know, there's moving in the pocket, reading defenses, all this other stuff. Like, okay, don't get all riled up about one little thing that somebody says.
Somebody put a graphic on, I think it was NFL Network, showing that on deep throws, Tua completes more of his deep throws of 20 yards or more, and he's got a better QBR and all this stuff. Well, then what they left out, and this is how convenient it is to anybody, and the same thing that politicians do with their numbers and their stats towards anything that they're arguing, and it's what, you know, talking heads do and so forth, whether it be news talk, sports talk. It's all convenient. You leave things out to better your argument. But they left out that Mahomes threw the ball over 20 yards twice as many times as Tua.
Yeah.
So first of all, this is not comparing apples to apples at all, okay? And by the way, I'm okay with Mahomes taking twice as many shots and completing 10% less, because I know I got more big plays out of Mahomes. They don't put that either. How many big plays did the Chiefs actually complete versus Tua and their Dolphins? They leave that out conveniently as well. And then Dolphin fans put out there like, well, see, Tua is, you think your quarterback's so great? Yeah, it's convenient. You can pick out whatever number you want to, okay? Like, it's just amazing to me. All right, NHL hockey Stanley Cup Finals get underway tonight in Denver. The Avs rolled to a four-game sweep for the Oilers. They haven't played since June 6th, so about a nine-day layoff. They're going to host that tonight against a two-time defending champion Tampa Bay Lightning. Lightning are down 2-0, came back, won the next four against the Rangers. The Avs haven't been in the Stanley Cup Finals since 2001, so 21-year drought, but they're 2-0 when they've been in the finals. So we'll see if that holds up. Game one of that series is at 7 o'clock tonight on ABC. NBA game six of the NBA Finals is going to be tomorrow night from Boston. And Dusty's Celtics in six now is gone. I have Warriors in seven.
Well, it's not gone.
The Celtics in six is gone.
Yeah. Six is gone. My bad.
I'm down 3-2.
My brain was not working when you said that. I was like, Celtics can still win. I was like, yeah, my bad.
I was like, didn't the Warriors win game five?
It's not gone. Come on, man. They can win it 3-3.
The Celtics are down 3-2. Yeah, your prediction of the Celtics winning six are over. No, it's not. I refuse to give up. Dude, they've lost three. They can't possibly win in six.
Yeah, my brain was not working.
That's okay.
I heard that comment.
That's okay. I'm just messing with you. So, Jason said Warriors in six, and I said Warriors in seven. That still stands. But do you guys feel, and we'll talk more about the NBA Finals tomorrow. We got K-State in focus coming up in just a moment to wrap up the show. Do you feel like the Celtics let this one slip away? Do you feel like the series, they were in control and they let it slip away?
Yeah.
And do you feel like they've blown their opportunities to where it's pretty much done now?
I do. I actually do. I thought the game five was the one. In a weird way, you know, I hate the word must win, but I felt that the Celtics needed game five more than the Warriors did, and they didn't get it. And also had a chance to maybe even not put it away, but to really take control in game four.
Yes, they were up.
And move that to 3-1. They didn't do it. It's kind of weird, you know. Here we are. I kind of feel both ways about it. I feel the Celtics have had their chance, but it's weird that we talk about the Warriors have won so many quarters over the Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's almost like the Warriors should almost have this one over too.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the Celtics,
they won game one, it would be over.
Yeah, had their real good chance to take control of the series, and they didn't. So
what do you think? You think the Celtics left their best chances? They let those opportunities slip by, or do you think they're going to win the next two?
I feel like the opportunities have slipped by. I want to say the Celtics are going to win it in seven because I picked the Celtics to win, but it's tough after the way the last two games have gone for them to regroup and try to do that. Now, this team has shown that they can go win on the road, right, and win at home wherever they're at. They can win, but it's a little more difficult. Looks the game five. Both teams needed that. They let it slip in game four.
Like, I agree.
You don't want four. The Warriors don't want to lose that game either because they got to go back to Boston down 3-2.
Right.
And they're back on the road again. I know that both teams have won on the road, so it's not. I don't think either team worries about that quite so much where they're playing, but they both needed game five. And the Celtics, if you can say they needed it more, maybe to get it done in six and go home and win, but game four is where it could have been wrapped up here for the Celtics.
I disagree with Jason on one point. I think the Warriors need a game five more than the Celtics, and here's why. The Celtics are a very good road team. The Celtics, all they need to do is win one road game out of two. So nothing has changed. Even though they lost game five, that's still they knew that if they win game five, they get the one. And then they win in Boston, it's over. You lose game five, well, okay, if we win in Boston, we know we got to get one in Golden State no matter what. Once they lost game four, we know we got to get one. So we didn't get the first one, so be it. As long as we win game six, we'll get another crack at it, and we're one of the best road teams in the playoffs. to me, I agree with you. I think game four is where it slipped, because game four, they were leading with about 5 minutes to go. They had the lead, and then they start. I felt like they settled. They settled for some jump shots instead of attacking the rim. After game three, when they attacked at will and dominated the fourth quarter, they got away from, and this was the question we had before the series. Can the Celtics close? And they did in their first two wins. But game four and game five, they did not close. I mean, game four was their game. They should have won that game. Steph Curry did some sensational things, but there really wasn't a lot of support for Steph. That was a game that they should have won at home, and they went cold and got, 14-3 run to end the game. Yeah. So their offense went stagnant. They went too much iso ball, and the Warriors, give them credit, played good defense. Game five, the Warriors are in control. Then the Celtics missed their first 12 threes, made their next eight, got back in it, and then they're up. And then when Jordan Poole hit that bank three at the end of the third quarter, I'm like, that's going to change everything. And the Celtics still had some opportunities in the fourth quarter. And then I feel like when I watch the Celtics stick, that Tatum holds on to it too much. Brown, they try to go iso. And then sometimes when they don't attack, you're dribbling the ball and then you're jacking a three when the shot clock's going down. And I don't know why Boston gets away from the things that work so well to get to where they get. Like when they made these eight threes in a row, the ball was moving all over the place. All of a sudden, we get down the final few minutes of the game, and I saw it against the Bucks. They're in the Heat. They were almost blew game seven because they did this. They almost blew game seven because they did this. Tatum, hold. Oh, they double, throw to Smart. Smart takes a three, which is not what you want in that situation. Tatum and Brown don't take the shots when they really need to. When Tatum and Brown have been aggressive, the game, go back and look at it. The games the Celtics have closed out, Tatum and Brown are aggressive and go to the rack, and they'll either get fouled or they're finished. And the games that they lose in the fourth quarter, those two guys are not as aggressive, and they get to be a little more timid. They settle, and there's more iso ball. And if we saw it, all we got to do is go back to the Oklahoma City Thunder against the Golden State Warriors when the Thunder had Kevin Durant. The Thunder were up 3-1 in that series. They had the Warriors beat. And they were talking about how Westbrook and Durant figured out how to share the ball, move the ball. And all of a sudden, when they had a chance to close it out, they apparently wanted to be heroes. And then they went back to the old way of playing. Westbrook and Durant holding the ball, iso ball. And what do you know? Lo and behold, they lost three in a row and deserved to lose because they went back to their old ways. They were that close. They had stuck with it all that way. And then, I guess we got to be hero ball. It doesn't work. The Warriors aren't hero ball. They move the ball. No matter what, they move the ball. And right now, I think the Celtics blew their opportunities. I think game four, they completely let it slip. That was a game. They could have owned this series. They'd been up 3-1, and Warriors have been spiraling. Nobody was doing anything offensively other than Steph in game four. So you come back to Golden State down 3-1 going, oh, man, a lot of pressure on these role players for the Warriors. Instead, you're 2-2. You have no lease on life. Then game five, you should win when Steph Curry only scores 16 points and goes 0-9 from 3. And Draymond Green didn't light the world on fire. He had a nice line, but he wasn't crazy awesome. And Klay Thompson didn't have a huge game. And Jordan Poole had a spurt. But there, Andrew Wiggins, who is probably the fourth best player on the team over the course of the regular season, maybe third, he was an all-star. If you can't beat the Warriors when the only guy going is Andrew Wiggins, do you deserve to win the championship? Like the Warriors, to me, this is the weakest of all the teams they've had that been in the NBA Finals. This is the weakest Warriors team. And Andrew Wiggins bailed him out the other night. He played great. And honestly, if you have to do an MVP vote of the series, Curry's 1A and 1B is Wiggins, to be quite frank with you. And I think Brown's been the best player, better than Tatum, for the Celtics. But at the end of the day, you got to make plays in crunch time. You got to come through at the end. And right now, Andrew Wiggins, at least in game five, outplayed Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum's going to be one of the faces of the league. Jason Tatum settles for fadeaway shots in the lane instead of putting his body into Andrew Wiggins. Why are you fading away? You're not Michael Jordan. Like, that's settling. Mm-hmm. Andrew Wiggins has done a wonderful job defensively. And you start to wonder, the longer the series goes, Has Wiggins figured out all of Tatum's tendencies already? You know, have the Warriors figured out more of the tendencies of the Celtics? Because one of the things we know about the Warriors is they're usually going to be able to score.
Mm-hmm.
The Celtics, great defensive team, but there are times where they go stagnant. That's exactly what's happened in the last two games. They have not come through, and their two best players have either disappeared, not taken a lot of shots, not been aggressive enough, or the ball sticks. And I don't see why that's going to change. I just don't see them being consistent enough to do that for two straight games to win this series now. I feel like they let it slip through their fingers.
It's like I say, it's game four for me. Game five, they're down 16, and then 12 at half and came back and tied it. So, I mean,
and they were up, actually. They were ahead.
Yeah, and in the third quarter, they got ahead by five, and then you talked about the Poole bank shot that went in, and then the Warriors scored 10 more points to start the fourth quarter. It was a 13-0 run with the Poole three at the buzzer. And so it's, you know, I don't feel like that game slipped as much as four because they had to fight back just to get in it and take the lead.
But if Steph Curry goes 0-for-9 from 3, you should win that game.
Yeah. When you look at the line after the game, it's like he went 0-for-9. They need to win that game.
Yeah.
And so you do get into those situations. And I talked about that yesterday. I mean, the problem with the Celtics right now is when things start going a little bit wrong for them, they panic a little bit.
Their turnovers kill them.
Exactly. Tatum and Brown, and they had 18 turnovers on Monday night.
That's been a problem throughout the playoffs for them.
Yeah, and it's just like you're not winning a lot of games. Turnover margins minus 12, right? The Warriors had 6 turnovers and the Celtics had 18. And they make the worst passes at the worst times. And it's like you get caught and you get stuck. And I don't feel like the Warriors are playing really good defense. Don't get me wrong. But the Celtics are leaning into that a little bit too much as well and making it a little bit easier for them defensively with some of the things that they're doing. So that, for me, is the biggest issue is just trust your team and trust your philosophy, right? Mm-hmm. Do what got you here. And I know that's got to be frustrating to Ime Udoka, and the fact that they just kind of at the end of games when they get down, they just kind of panic a little bit. And,
right.
And Tatum and Brown feel like they got to do everything. And Derek White wasn't making open threes. So, you know, it's like your role players aren't hitting shots like maybe they did in another game. So now I really even more I feel like I got to do everything here. So that's, for me, what I've seen is the issue for the Celtics in this series. But, yeah, I mean, they had the lead in game four. And if you we're talking about a different
–
it's a different conversation right now if they just close that game out.
Well, after game three, I said the Celtics are the bigger and more athletic and tougher team. And they were. And I said, I think they're going – Curry had the foot sprain, you know, that was bothering him. And I thought, listen, this is the chance for the Celtics to put these guys away. You're at home. And for 3.5 quarters, they were the better team. That night, they were in game four. You're right, Dusty. They were the better team. And then the final 5 minutes, I think the experience kicked in. You know, Curry – and Warriors had some other guys make some plays in that final quarter. And the Celtics went – you know, they went against what got them to that point. And it's much like OKC against the Warriors so many years ago. And it's frustrating to watch if you're a Celtic fan because, like, come on, man, we've got this game. We're a good defensive team. All we need to do is get a couple of really good offensive possessions. And that's the thing. Some of these possessions they end up with bad shots. It's not like they get a good look and they miss it. Mm-hmm. They take some tough shots. There's times where they force the ball, get too deep. That's what causes turnovers. And you're right. Turnovers is the biggest thing. You cannot have that many empty possessions in NBA Finals games. And it's interesting. Celtics' defense is so good, but yet the Warriors aren't turning the ball over a ton. I mean, they've had some games where they have. But the last game, you mentioned 6 turnovers. And the Celtics had 18, I think it was. That's 12 possessions to where you didn't even probably get a shot off. Mm-hmm. That's gigantic. Gigantic.
Yep. And I think, like you're kind of mentioning, this is the point in the series when teams are starting to figure each other out a little bit, and then you've also kind of already done your adjustment. So now it's kind of going to be on the individual players.
Yeah.
And on one hand, I would say Tatum is probably right now the best at being an individual player and getting your own shot and trying to get your own. But I think the Warriors have more of Steph Curry. Maybe they get one throwback game from Klay Thompson. Jordan Poole can have, even if it's just a spurt like he did in game five. Now with Wiggins, I think they have more options to maybe have a couple of bigger games individually that just kind of put them over the top. They still have a couple of different ways with the whole team ball movement thing that the Warriors do to maybe just have that big third quarter again like they're known for that can put one of these two games away. I just think they have a little bit more in their treasure chest right now when you get down to the end of a series.
I remember when we talked about it, I think Dusty was at A-Man practices last week. We were talking about, Jason and I was, it was 2-1, Celtics were up. Jason said Warriors win game four. I said Celtics, I think, going to eventually outlast them. They're going to win game four. And I remember we talked about it and said, listen, every time you think a team has a series in control, we should have learned the last few years that there can be a sea change. And it seems like there's been many NBA series where there's a sea change and you don't expect it, and you should get used to it. And we mentioned going into game four, if the Warriors find a way to win game four, it completely changes the tone of the entire series. And they did. They found a way with Steph with 43 points, and they changed the tone of the series because the Celtics were 5 minutes away from controlling everything. They let it slip through their fingers, and we were talking about how the Warriors are, you know, 4-on-5 when they're on offense, sometimes 3-on-5 because if Looney and Green are on the field at the court at the same time, Green's not a threat offensively. And now if you get to the Celtics, they don't move the ball. Now you've got 1-on-1. That ain't going to win. The Celtics have more guys that can shoot the ball collectively as a whole. When they have 5 guys on the floor, every one of them can shoot except maybe Robert Williams, and he's not out there all the time. And they can stretch the floor a little bit more, which makes it maddening because the Warriors basically sometimes have 3 offensive threats and that's it. And yet the Celtics still haven't been able to take advantage of that. And that's why it's frustrating to me. If you're a Celtics fan, the Warriors are the weakest. This is the weakest version of the Warriors we've seen in the NBA Finals, and that's part of the reason. They don't have as much offensive firepower, and yet you turn the ball over, you beat yourselves, and, you know, game five at Golden State, I mean, that you battle all the way back, and you have all the momentum, and you're supposedly the better defensive team, and as I said, the tougher, more physical team, and yet it was the Warriors making the physical plays, I thought, in down the stretch, whether that's want to, or whether it's just more concentration, but the Celtics had everything sitting there for them, and I think we all agree that they let it slip through their hands. And it goes to show you, after game one, Warriors in trouble. After game two, all right, things are back in line. Celtics are lucky to be tied 1-1. Celtics win game three. Celtics are in control. The Warriors have no answers. The Celtics are bigger, badder. They're the bullies on the block. And then all of a sudden, the Warriors win game four, and it's like, yeah, but that took a great effort. Celtics are still going to probably find a way to win game five. Now the Warriors win game five, and all of a sudden you're going, dear Lord, the Celtics are about to get eliminated. How? It changes that fast, and that's what we said at the beginning of the show. Whether it's a series, whether it's an individual performance, individual player, team performance, it's amazing how you can be so good and then be maybe so bad.
Right.
And that's why sports is so great, because that's what makes it so unpredictable.
It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit.
Well, Dusty, I don't know if you saw this or not, but K-State women's basketball will take part in a unique game. The Wildcats will face Wisconsin as part of the Brew City Battle in Milwaukee on Friday, November the 11th. The game between the Wildcats and Badgers, this is women's basketball, will be played at American Family Field, home of the Brewers. It'll be played at a baseball park.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
It is.
I didn't know about that until this morning.
It'd be real nice.
It'd be really cool.
Because they got a roof on that, don't they? So yeah. They'll close it up.
Yeah.
There was one time, like early 2000s or something, like Tennessee put a game outdoors or something in women's basketball. But, yeah, that'll be interesting for sure.
See, there's men, they have a men's game almost every year on a carrier,
yeah,
which is kind of interesting, which they're working on that right now. They get one in a couple of years, too. Jeff Mitty said, we're excited to play in such a unique venue and challenge our team to an early road contest against a quality opponent. This is the first time in the 55-year history of K-State women's basketball that the Wildcat women will play a game in a Major League Baseball stadium. I don't think a lot of people have much experience.
Put a stat out there that's like, that's probably pretty obvious.
I think it's pretty safe to go with that.
Leslie went to Kauffman Stadium and played a game and hosted one. Yeah.
And K-State men's basketball, they've added a player as Arkansas State transfer Desi Sills. Sills has committed to K-State as 6'2" guard. He announced it on Twitter. Last season, Arkansas State, he was a team's second-leading scorer, averaging 12.5 points per game, averaged 30 minutes a game, 3 assists, 3.5 rebounds, almost 2 steals over his 28 games for the Red Wolves. Wasn't Noel from Arkansas State, too?
Little Rock.
Little Rock. Yeah, okay, yeah. I knew it was Arkansas though. That's right. Arkansas State, Arkansas. So there's a pipeline, plethora of talent coming from lower-level schools from Arkansas going to K-State. So an addition for Jerome Tang and his coaching staff.
Yeah, they need all the bodies they can get right now. So he'd come up, Desi Sills would come up actually earlier in the process. And so it's nice to have these guys coming in and start building something. I still think probably they're going to need to find maybe a JUCO guy or something just to put bodies in uniforms to have enough people to play. I'm not concerned about that. But
are you a little disappointed, though, in with the recruiting of Jerome Tang so far? There's not. I can't think of, like, you're like, wow, that's a really good get.
What the problem is with these guys he's getting is when they came out of high school, they were really popular and expected to do really good things. But most of these guys didn't really even play a lot of games or minutes where they were at before.
Right.
The Gassan guy that they got from Virginia Tech, like, I think he only played like 4 games last year. I could be wrong about that.
The kid from LSU didn't have much
of the numbers. Yeah, but that's probably the most highly touted one that they got, and he just didn't play enough to know what he's going to be. And so part of that in your mind is like, well, maybe a change of scenery is going to help them elevate. Like, that's the word that Jerome Tang used, right?
Well, look what Noel did.
He said elevate. You know, that's what they want to do. Maybe that's the whole process and point of getting guys like this that he can, you know, teach that elevate to. Mm-hmm. You know, just you didn't have a good start to your career, but you're here to get better and move forward. And I think you're going to see that with some of these guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't, then K-State's going to have a bad season, right? So I wouldn't say I'm disappointed with the way he's recruited. I may be disappointed that some of the guys decided to go elsewhere that he was looking at from the transfer portal. But as far as, I mean, it's too early for me to say I'm disappointed. I can't ever get into recruit.
Yeah, you don't know. We don't
recruit bases until I see these guys step on the floor and see what they did.
I think the two things stand out to me about those situations you just mentioned. These kids are hungry and motivated.
Yeah.
And that's why I like what the Chiefs did with a lot of these one-year deals for guys. It's make it or prove it deals. Like, you're hungry and you're motivated. And McCall Hardman has reason to be motivated this year, obviously, a contract year. There's various players that sign, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster, Ronald Jones. I can go on. There's lots of one-year deals. Now, granted, if they have a great year, they might go elsewhere, but you just deal with it year to year. But the Chiefs didn't tie up a lot in the future. What I like with K-State men's basketball is that these younger kids were highly recruited, some of them, as you mentioned, and they haven't got to the greatest start. Maybe they need a change of scenery. Maybe there's not as much pressure on them now that they are a year removed from being a highly touted recruit, right? People tend to forget about you if you don't do great your first year or two in college. And hungry and motivated, that's a pretty good combination for an athlete typically.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the whole change of scenery can also mean, hey, I got a better coach that can bring out what I need,
right?
What kind of game I can have than, you know, maybe at LSU where it was kind of a dicey situation with their coaching situation too. He's not there anymore. So, you know, maybe you feel like you got a better guy that can lead you and teach you the things that you need to do as well. Mm-hmm. So there's positives that could come out of it. We just don't know a lot about these guys.
That's right. Our focus on K-State Athletics today brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. And the big news we saved for last is Jason finally saw Top Gun. You've seen it, right, Dusty?
Top Gun, like the original Top Gun?
The new one.
I've not seen the new one, no.
Oh, well then.
No.
What? Dude, he's a bachelor. He's got no kids activities to chase after. He could go anytime. We got free movie tickets right over here for crying out loud. I mean, Jason finally went. Jason, I was making fun of you that it's taking this long to watch it. Well, my apologies.
I know.
I've seen it 8 times.
it was good.
I got to be completely honest with you. I've watched the original Top Gun like 1 time all the way through. And it was before my time, right?
Right.
And so it wasn't like something that stuck out to me and I needed to watch again. We all have our movies, right? Yours is Top Gun, mine's Scream. You know,
like fighter jets. You don't like action.
Sure, I do.
Okay, well then you got to go see it.
Yeah,
go see it.
But it's just not one that. I mean, it's. It's hard for me to sit through movies too right now, unless I really, really want to see it because I'm so used to just watching at home and you know there's sidetracked and other things that kind of take your attention away. So if it's not something that I'm really,
really
invested.
I think he's trying to tell us that he doesn't like Top Gun.
I think so.
I'm not saying I don't like it. I'm saying I don't love it. Like I need
to go see it. Well, you don't have to love it to go still see it.
I'll probably watch it when it comes out.
There's lots of movies that I don't... I've seen sequels that I don't love the original, but I'm like, I'll just still go watch the movie.
I gave
especially with the access that we have.
Yeah, I gave it 4 out of 5.
Four out of 5?
Yep. I liked it.
I mean, everybody's saying that... I've not really seen a bad review.
I haven't seen a bad review. I haven't seen anybody that I know that's seen it that
people that have actually watched it that are fans, not like... There might have been a bad review from a critic, but I don't...
I haven't seen anything.
Yeah.
I give it 4 out of 5 stars.
Has been good, but it's just... I don't know.
So are you going to wait? Are you going to wait for it on syndication, or when are you going to watch it?
I'll probably watch it when it comes out, where I can rent it on my TV.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. We should have the station
because,
showing.
Again, I can...
make him go.
It's just some of the movies are hard for me to...
My dad is so disappointed. My dad has said that he thinks you... He actually told me one time that that you were his favorite. Here at the radio station.
Wow.
It was before Jason was on staff. So that means he likes you better than his own son. And now, Dusty, I just don't think he's going to... He listens to our show every day. He's just not going to be happy with you now. I think Jason will now be his most favorite person because he doesn't like to talk to me very much because he's too big of a deal, apparently.
But no, I thought...
I gave 4.5 stars. Jason gave 4. What about that? All the hype, there was hype before. Then I watched it. Then there's hype for everybody else. Everybody's watched it except Dusty. And then Jason watched it. And Jason said, even for him, after all that hype and waiting that long.
Yes, yeah. That's what happens. Sometimes things just get built up so big that it's just...
Maybe that's why Dusty's not going to go watch
maybe,
it.
Maybe. And I think that's what I do with TV shows. If I can't watch them as they're going on, we all have, the play-by-play thing. And sometimes that makes it tough. And so I'll just tell myself, I'll just wait. And I usually wait too long because people build these things up to they're just so big. And I'm like, I don't know if that's going to live up now. And then, so I just wait a little bit longer. And then, no, nobody's talking about it anymore. And then they give me that look like, you haven't watched that at all? And I'm like, I know. So, I get expectations and hype do play a big part in how much you enjoy things. If you have low expectations and it's a average to good movie, you're enjoying that more than if you think it's going to be the best thing ever and it's still that average to good movie, you're going to dislike it.
Absolutely.
And so, that's what I try to keep those things in check. But this was Top Gun. This had jets.
Yes.
This had fighter jets and missiles and aircraft carriers.
Don't spoil it for everybody. Basically what the first one had. But
I will say this. I'm not going to give away the ending, but I'm going to say...
Oh, I know. You already say you don't like the ending.
4.5 to 4. It's the ending's really? That's what they're going to do final finale?
I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
I mean, I was okay with what I knew it was coming. I thought that, I don't want to ruin it for everybody. Yeah. Although Dusty's the only person in Mitchell County that hasn't seen it, so I could probably just say. Yeah. But, we'll talk off
that's
the
That's how they're getting to the last action sequence. That's how they're getting there?
I'll tell you what would have been really the greatest curveball of all time for this show and this movie, and it would have been really, really sad. But I can't say it on the air because I don't want you to think it can't happen in the movie. But let's just say that's probably why my dad doesn't talk to me anymore, because of my idea for his character.
I still feel we're still in the spoiler range. You just can't.
I know.
I can't quite go there yet.
Well, if it's still in the theater, I think it's spoiler range. Yeah. I just want to say that my idea would probably make sure that there is no Top Gun 3 in another 36 years.
Right.
And then my dad would be 52. Because he's always young at heart. If Dusty wants to go, if anybody out there has not seen Top Gun Maverick yet, I think everybody around here has seen it at least twice, except for Jason, and they've seen it once, and Dusty's seen it 0. It is showing at Sun Valley Cinema, and it is showing at 7 o'clock tonight and tomorrow, and I'm pretty sure that'll be the last two nights it'll be at Sun Valley Cinema in Beloit. So if you haven't seen it by now, you either don't want to see it, like Dusty, or you've been really, really busy, and you have to wait till it comes out on DVD or TV, buy it, rent it, whatever the case may be. But you've had ample time to go see it. Number one movie in America? Well, not now, technically, but it was.
It will be overall box office.
Yeah. It wasn't Jurassic World surpassed them for last week, which I've heard a lot of more negative reviews towards Jurassic World.
Yeah, I've heard some people say that's really probably not good.
Yeah, but, that's one that can go south in a hurry. Yeah, you know, like those kind of movies, you got to be in them or you're not in.
And,
them, right?
And did we all see Jurassic Park? Did we all see the?
I saw the first one.
I've seen the first. Actually, I've seen the first three Jurassic. I don't think I've seen the new Jurassic World ones. There's been a couple Jurassic World.
I haven't seen them all.
I've seen the first, like the Jurassic Park and then Lost World.
I've seen the first one, but I'm seeing.
And to Dusty's point, this is one that I'm just not that into. I saw the first one.
I am too.
Okay, and so I just not into the Jurassic World. Sorry, so I'm not. You know,
I don't think there's as much hubbub around this one as Top Gun, but there is hubbub around it. But yeah, I'm with you on that. But anyway, go see my dad.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.